What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, April 9th, 2019. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the busiest lady in the business, Andrea Renee.
What's good, Greg?
This outfit I walked in, stunning as always.
Oh, thank you.
Is this a
thank
new jacket? I haven't seen this jacket.
No, I've worn this jacket a couple of times in the last few months, but I like to bring it out in springtime because the sun is out, the flowers are blooming.
Yeah.
So it's time for the white jacket. I don't subscribe to this rule about only wear white between Memorial and Labor Day. That's BS.
A weird one. Remember that? I feel like all those rules are gone now. Yeah, all the rules you know our parents had to live by, they're done.
If I want to wear white shoes in January, I'm going to wear white shoes in January.
You know what I mean? They're going to get scuffed up with salt most of the time, but you're fine.
Who cares?
Yeah, I don't miss that about
winter white, Greg.
Ugh, yeah. No, thank you. Hey, Andrea.
Yes.
Thanks so much for doing so much work around here the past couple days.
Hey, I'm happy to help out. How was New York? We were talking about how many people showed up.
New York was insane. Thank you, everybody who came to the Kinda Funny World Tour meet and greet in New York City. You were incredible, amazing. It was like a 5.5 hour meet and greet that was shut down by the bar, then shut down by the sun, then shut down by the guy who would not leave the Starbucks bathroom when I had to pee so bad.
Wow.
Because the idea was the bar was too crowded. We've run out of time. There's still hundreds of people we all needed to meet. So they were like, Greg, you have the longest line. We're going to move you to a park close by. And I said, all right, that's interesting, but that's us. Let's do it. And the park, not that close by. And it turns out, not that close by a bathroom either. So real soon I had to pee, but I signed for another few hours, took photos for a while. And then finally I was like, all right, everybody, we got to go. And I took my line back up to where I was going to the bar. And then I see Andrea Starbucks. I see the Starbucks right there. I'm like, perfect. Let me run in there and pee. It'll be great. I go in the Starbucks, and it's that nightmare scenario where you see one other guy making the towards the bathroom. I'm like, oh, no. And he opens the door first, and he's got a duffel bag. And I'm like,
oh, no.
So I sat there a good 15 minutes while he did whatever he did in there with that duffel bag and clothing options. And then he finally came out, and I did
you
that.
You didn't feel compelled to be like, sir, can I just pee really quick? I'll be in and out in 60 seconds.
No, because at that point, like five and a half hours of meeting and greeting, they're not doing it in the right order anymore for me, because it was that thing of like, how long can it take? And then it was also the thing of, well, I could always go back to the bar. I'm all across the street from the original bar now. But it was that thing of once I sat down, I knew it was that even when I stood back up, you know, I stood back up on one of these.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I got to pee so bad. I got to pee so, like, you know what I mean? I was not going to be able to Hans Molman walk over to the other bar and be fine.
I get
this
you.
Is what happened. This is our last stop. Yeah. So yeah, then I came out and I signed for the few more people, and then I found my wife. And it was a good time. It was an amazing time. Thank you all so much for coming out. Thank you to all the people who made me look really good at WrestleMania, by the way, where I was going backstage to do the watch along with the WWE people. And so WWE people are walking me through it. And I got stopped by like 7 people on the floor of WrestleMania, like, holy shit, Greg Miller. I'm like, hey, thanks for making this happen, everybody.
That's
amazing
awesome.
Times. It was awesome. It was incredible.
How was the watch along? We tuned in. John and I were watching WrestleMania.
Sure.
And so we had the YouTube up on the second screen.
Sure. Thank you very much.
It seemed like there was just chaos happening
pretty
in
much.
Room.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, WWE usually very tight on what they're doing. Their .com YouTube thing was a lot looser. I was just so whatever. People are coming. People are going. Wrestlers are coming in, slamming cupcakes in people's faces. I'm yelling at people. I'm eating cheese sticks off the ground. It was great. It was also incredible and cool, but it was a good... It was another cool thing to be backstage. Like, oh, I'm here with Mario Lopez, and there's Brie Bella, and this is neat. We're just chilling out. Fun times all around.
Nice.
You'll hear about him today on the Kinda Funny podcast, but that's not what this show is. This show runs you through things like Star Wars Jedi, The Fallen Order news, Troy Baker in Borderlands 3 news, and much more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday in a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show. Patreon.com/KindaFunnyGames. If you go there, you subscribe, you give us your questions, comments, concerns, bad PSN names, and everything else under the video game sun. Then tune in, watch us record the show live, twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to KindaFunny.com/YoreWrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up, so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and roosterteeth.com, as well as everybody listening on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping for you. Yes, New York City was incredible. Yes, they crushed the attendance record set by Kansas City. Now, the Kinda Funny Nation turns its eyes to Vancouver. May 4th, Vancouver. Can you bring more people than New York did? We will find out.
Greg, you got to rethink where you're going to have it now.
Well,
make it bigger.
I went to kindoffunny.com/events. We still haven't posted where it is, so we're still thinking, I think. I don't know. Joey knows.
Yeah, Joey probably knows. Greg, I'm happy to report that this is the first meet and greet that I'm going to not in San Francisco.
I'm glad to see you're finally accepting my invitation to come be part of a meet and greet, boss baby. That's where we are. You know what I mean? I'm glad you feel like you've come far enough in this company that you can actually come and be part of the fans that you claimed that you came from.
Well, I was actually invited this time.
I invited you to New York on this show.
He did technically do that, Barrett.
I didn't say I was going to pay for anything. I just said, hey, you're invited.
He did well, also
I was,
say
I was
that,
invited
yes.
and paid for it for Vancouver. So I also had to take care of your dog over
First off, your girlfriend did, and that's why I paid her, not you. All right? So that's what happened there.
I was there, and I helped.
You were great. You did a lot of good social media. You know what I mean? I got a follow from Jen on Instagram, right? She had to see what's going on.
I fed him. Gave him his pills and treats.
Did you wipe his tush?
Yeah, I wiped his tush.
Good. Yeah. All right.
I was there.
No problems? No seizures or anything?
No.
Another funny thing that happened while you guys were there, apparently, or right after we had left, we're not sure. Did Alyssa tell you this?
Oh, she told me about this.
This is going to be another kind of funny podcast story. Turns out a shotgun fungus went off in our house.
A what?
We'll talk about it on the Kind of Funny podcast this afternoon. Vancouver, May 4th, kindoffunny.com/events. Thank you to Patreon producers Tom Bach, Blackjack, James Davis, Mohammed. Today we're brought to you by Hims and Harry's, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Three items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Number one, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order reveal is coming this Saturday at that there Star Wars celebration. We'll start with Star Wars on Twitter, who tweets, "Become a Jedi." Tune in for first look at Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order this Saturday at 1:30 p.m. Central Time from Star Wars Celebration. Watch live at Star Wars, blah, blah, blah. Stay up to date at the latest at celebration at StarWars.com, at EA Star Wars. Then at EA Star Wars tweeted out, "Don't stand out." With the logo and the reveal of like this little thing and like the it's lighting up. You see it? You see what I'm talking about?
I'll look it up.
It doesn't look. Barrett, will you bring it up for the kids?
The photo that they posted?
Yeah. You can go to either EA Star Wars. That's probably gonna be fastest. Twitter.com/EA Star Wars. It's got like it looks like they're trying to summon a fallen Jedi. You know what I mean? They're trying to.
Oh, look at this, Tom Bach.
Kevin Coelho follows Tom Bach right there at the top. Here you go. Oh, there it is up there. See? So look, it looks like, what is this? This is a blown out lightsaber. Is that what I'm looking at, Barrett? You're one of these Star Wars nerds.
It
looks like a seatbelt that didn't go correctly.
Sure, yeah.
It looks like a seatbelt got torn off. Am I wrong?
Yeah, it looks like the bottom hat where you
scroll
hold
Scroll up
lights.
A little bit. Scroll up to the banner. The banner is real tight on it. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so a lightsaber. That's a lightsaber. Yeah. Right. Well, is it? Because where's the lightsaber blade come out? Is that the top of it?
I imagine right here is where gotcha. The...
Oh, okay. I see. It's like a tuning fork at the
and
top.
And then the hilts or whatever.
Sure.
There's got to be a Star Wars nerd in the Twitch chat that knows the answer to this question.
Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. I'm going to say exactly. Is that... I assume it's going to be a lightsaber, of course.
Yeah,
it looks like
a lightsaber.
It's a goofy hilt at the top there or whatever. It's all blown out. But
I like the don't stand out.
Do you understand what it means, Barrett?
So, from what I understand from what they revealed very little of this game, it's after Episode 3, but before Episode 4. And so this is a time where Jedi are not accepted or anything. So what I assume here is you're a Jedi and you're on the run.
What we know so far, Boss Baby, goes like this.
Ooh.
Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order comes out in fall 2019. It's set after the Revenge of the Sith. Right. So it's after Order 66, right?
Yeah.
Is that right, 66?
Yes.
Okay.
And from
one of the official lores here, it says, tells an original Star Wars story around a surviving Padawan set shortly after the events of Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
Shit,
it's single player only. It does feature lightsaber duels. How do we know most of that information? Andrea got it.
Ooh.
Out there talking to Vince in the audience at EA Play last year.
I mean, that's false. We didn't give any of that information during EA Play. But I was there when Vince revealed the name of the game. So we knew that Respawn had been working on this in secret for some time, and I think there's a lot of fans out there that are very anxious for this single player experience after the shuttering of Visceral and the Star Wars project that Amy Hennig was working on.
Yeah.
It's kind of a daunting aspect, thinking what is EA going to do with the Star Wars license. There was all these rumbles about them getting it pulled and having some kerfluffles with Disney after what happened with Battlefront 2.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot of expectation.
A lot riding on this game.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So hopefully the reveal is great and it's exciting. After the wildly successful launch of Apex Legends, Respawn is riding high right now. So fingers crossed, everything looks awesome.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing is when people talk about this game, single player only, it's going to have lightsaber duels, it's going to have all this stuff. I'm not saying that Respawn can't do it. Respawn's an amazing, talented studio, right? But you just associated them so much with first-person shooters, right? That to get in there and have it be that it's going to be, at least in some branch, Melee, in some branch, single-player, which, of course, they dip their toes in with Titanfall 2. It's going to be really interesting to see and fascinating what they come up with and how it's going to look.
I have faith that they can do it. I loved the Titanfall campaign in Titanfall 2.
Totally.
And after seeing studios like Guerrilla transition from FPS to, third person action adventure, it can be done.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm not saying it's impossible. They're a talented team over there, Andrew. I'm not counting them out.
Okay.
I'm just saying it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And like you bring up the interesting wrinkle for sure that this is EA's, these sirens are on our end. This is EA's next shot at the batting here, right? Where it is that, okay, cool. There were these rumblings. There were people, obviously audience members, pundits calling for them to lose the license, have somebody else open it up. And then the rumors that, yeah, EA in the behind the scenes, Disney was not happy. Star Wars was not happy in having these conversations. You have to imagine, yeah, that if this isn't a home run, what happens? What goes next?
So I would assume that it must be good because they're promoting it a lot, right?
That's Star Wars, though. Yeah. And that's the other thing, too, is like I feel after the Battlefront stuff, both games, really, no matter how good it looks come Saturday, you have to wait until you get out of your hands and you get in-depth impressions and you know
True.
How long the campaign
Which
is.
Which I would imagine won't happen until EA Play at E3 this year.
Sure.
So yeah. They'll do the big splashy reveal, Star Wars Celebration. Hopefully we'll get some kind of CG trailer or maybe even a glimpse at gameplay. And then I anticipate like a deep dive into gameplay at EA Play. Yeah. And then fall 2019 release.
The idea of being, you know, this Padawan set after all the other Jedis are murdered sounds awesome. I would love to play that. Yeah. Yeah. From kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Kebab says, IGN also theorizes that the Fallen Order device could be a vibrostaff. Don't get excited, ladies. It's actually a Sith weapon that is made out of material that lightsabers can't cut through. So, all right. Good to know there. I like that one.
Interesting.
We'll see what happens, right?
Yeah.
Saturday. Get your vibrostaffs ready. Set them to fun.
Oh.
Number two, Troy Baker is not returning for Borderlands 3. This is from Alex Avard over at Games Radar, who watched Troy and Nolan's panel over in Melbourne, Australia, and busted out this thing. Quote, I think he might have busted out from the Reddit. It doesn't matter. Quote, I'm sorry to break it to y'all, but that isn't me, said Baker in response to fans' questions about his potential involvement as Reese in Borderlands 3, explaining that there were early conversations with Gearbox about returning to the role before the actor discovered that the studio apparently went with someone else when he saw Reese make an appearance in the trailer. Andrew, you're briefed on this. Of course, Tales from the Borderlands, the narrative adventure from Telltale Games, featured a character named Reese that was Troy Baker, that he was awesome at. Him and Laura Bailey, awesome in that entire series. The entire cast, Aaron Yvette, everybody awesome in that game.
That game was great.
Amazing game. And so then, for me, as a huge fan of Tales from the Borderlands, seeing Reese in there, I was like, oh man, they got Troy too?
What an all-star cast.
Yeah, he's got a mustache now. Troy went on to continue. If Gearbox decides that they'll let me do it, that'll be awesome, said Baker. I have no idea. There was a possibility that I was going to be in it. Then I saw that epic trailer, and everyone's like, oh my God, there's Reese. And I went, well, there you go. Quote, I've never done this before, but I would love for Gearbox to know that it's not about me. It's about the character, Baker continued, saying that if they're going to bring back characters from Telltale Borderlands, it should be the people that originated the characters, end quote. How's that stick in your craw?
I would absolutely agree with that. It's confusing to me that they would bring Reese to Borderlands 3 and not have Troy voice it.
Yep.
I mean, obviously Troy's a friend of the show and we're both friends with Troy, so we have a bias because we want him to do good things. But also, like, that was such a great standalone narrative set within the Borderlands universe that was really pretty universally well received.
Yeah. If you haven't played Tales from the Borderlands, go play Tales from the Borderlands for sure.
Of all of the things that Telltale did, it was probably my like second favorite thing.
Behind Jurassic Park.
Well, behind Walking Dead Season 1. Jurassic Park. You.
I got you. See what I did there? That one wasn't good.
But yeah, no. So I don't know if this means that Reese is actually going to have a much smaller role in Borderlands 3 than we anticipated, or if they recast him. But I don't know why Gearbox would do that.
Money? Would you assume money? Troy's a huge deal.
Yeah, I know Troy's expensive because he's like, you know, the top of the top now. Yeah. But I mean, I'm sure Gearbox can afford it. You know who can? 2K. They're financing that game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I mean? They got money.
To your point, yeah, obviously we're in the tank for Troy Baker. We love Troy Baker. I think if you went to any, though, beloved game, and if for some reason we didn't know, and I'm searching right now for a game that has a huge star that we don't know well. Doesn't matter. I want to see that legacy continue, right? Because it was that the performances of Tales from the Borderlands were what made that game work so well. On top of the writing, obviously, but it wasn't gameplay, right? It was getting lost in that world and having the robot, the ball that Ashley Johnson played. Not Gladys, that obviously. Did you play Gertie, right? Was it Gertie? Yeah, I think it was Gertie. Kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. What was Ashley Johnson's character in Tales from the Borderlands? they were all so memorable outside of their names, but their performances, right? That when they speak and interact, and I want to see them interact with the people that, you know, we know from that Borderlands thing. And that was the other thing, of having characters from the real Borderlands universe crossover and have their voice and have Handsome Jack there. Like, it was one connected world that I didn't think was going to work when they announced it. I was like, why would you make a... Borderlands is about shooting and getting loot. Why would I go and play a Telltale story-based version? But then it did work out so well, and it was such a great ride that, yeah, when I saw it in there, I would be more excited if it was a bit part, right? Where it is Troy Baker, and it is one cutscene I get with him, one interaction I get with him, and then he's off-world, or he gets shot or something, you know? There's a million fun ways to do that. Gertie is what they're saying. Yeah, okay. But that's the thing. They spelled it right. Gorty's. G-O-R-T-Y-S.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But it's Gertie, right? That's how they said it. Now someone, you're wrong me phonetically. I hope they bring him back. I hope they figure out a way to do it. Yeah. I do, and it's also that thing where, and now here's where we're really in the tank for Troy Baker, is that I feel like Troy's a great guy. And I feel like if it was just a budget thing, I feel like Troy would be able to, they'd be able to meet somewhere. But right. As Troy says, it's about the character, not about him. He'd want to be able to give that to the fans.
Maybe Reese is going to make an appearance very briefly in the campaign, and then he'll be like the first like DLC pack, and they still have time to record his lines.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Mm.
If not, cast Boss Baby Barrett to be Reese.
Hey, yo, I'm a Reese.
Oh, you didn't play the game. Okay, cool. Oh. Number three. Gordis is what people are saying. Capitalist Big says Gordis. Number three, Steam is losing another game, apparently, possibly, to the Epic Store. This is Jordan Ramey over at GameSpot. I just, if you had one name, Jordan Ramey, it should be Jamie, because I would just combine it like that. Anyways, although it hasn't been confirmed, it looks like Anno 1800 is becoming an Epic Games Store exclusive. Originally scheduled for a Steam release, Anno 1800 will be discontinued on Steam after its release date on April 16th. Quote, sales of Anno 1800 will be discontinued on Steam after April 16th due to a publisher decision to make the game exclusive to another PC store, a notice on Anno 1800's Steam page reads. The publisher has assured us that all prior sales of the game on Steam will be fulfilled on Steam, and Steam owners will be able to access the game and any future updates or DLC through Steam, end quote. The notice doesn't list what other store is getting the exclusive, but given what's happened over the past few months, it makes sense to assume it's Epic. Since 2018, several titles have left Steam just prior to release and gone to Epic instead. Some games even have even been pretty major AAA titles too, such as Metro Exodus and The Division 2. Prior to Anno 1800, Borderlands 3 was the latest AAA title to join the Epic Games Store as an exclusive, although it's only exclusive for 6 months as opposed to the other titles' year-long exclusivity. It continues, Andrea. The fight, the war between Epic and Steam.
Well, I think that at least Ubisoft is, I believe that they're playing this right. They're giving people an opportunity to get it pre-ordered on Steam and are saying we're going to support it on Steam. Post-launch, you just won't be able to buy it on Steam after launch day. So if you are really, truly interested in getting Anno, you know, get it into your Steam wishlist or whatever, or pre-order it, and then you're all set. And then afterwards, they're saying, okay, now we're moving it to Epic Game Store. I think that should be pretty uncontroversial.
Sure. But it's just another thing of bold moves, right?
Yeah.
As Epic continues to throw their wallet around.
They announced a partnership with Epic at GDC, didn't they? Yes. Following the launch of the Division 2 on Epic Games Store, the two companies have extended their arrangement. So I'm reading from a Destructoid story. It says, this will see several major PC releases launch on the Epic Games Store alongside Uplay. Additionally, Ubisoft will be giving out older titles through Epic's free games program. So it looks like Ubisoft is just lining up to partner with Epic for multiple PC releases going forward.
Sure. The Nanobiologist writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames with a lengthy one. But of course, Nanobiologist rocks, and it was a pleasure to meet him in New York. He says, what's good, Greg and Andrea? I know the topic of PC game store exclusivity has been a hot and pretty thoroughly discussed topic the past couple of months, but I want to bring another side that I feel like has been overlooked. I am writing in today because I think there's a point overlooked. PC gamers are not ones for generations, unlike console players, even though they've gone through them themselves in different ways. Think of it this way. PC started out as a disc-based, go-buy-the-game-and-install-it, Gen 1. Then Steam came along, allowing users one place to pay, download, and launch games, Gen 2. Now, multiple digital stores are popping up, getting exclusives, and mimicking the console markets, Gen 3. We've seen this before, but with less backlash. Each console generation, people jump ship to either PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo, or to PC to play the next generation of games, but everyone is okay with this because that's how it's been. Back in 2013, people were okay with dropping their achievements/trophies, game libraries, and all gaming attachments to go to a different side, but not when it comes to a PC. even though it's free to download a new client. Maybe all this hubbub is because a place that isn't used to generations slash major changes is finally experiencing what most console players have gone through since the 80s. What do you all think of these points brought from a tired, traveled out man? Should this be a new way to think of PC gaming, or should I keep console gaming thoughts and rhetoric out of the pristine PC gaming lawn? Greg, even though it was brief, it was almost a life-changing experience meeting you and the rest of Kinda Funny in New York. Aww. The nanobiologist. It was a pleasure meeting you. Of course, there's a great clip going around Twitter of him introducing himself and me flipping out. Sad it came at the end of the thing where I had to pee so goddamn bad.
Yeah.
What do you think, Andrea?
So, Fran and I talked a little bit about this while you were gone, and I'll just echo what I said then, is that it's confusing to me why PC players are making this this comparison to the console market, because if you have a PC, you don't have to buy new equipment to play with people on a different platform. As the nanobiologist writes, you merely have to download a free client.
Yeah.
So it's not like when Gary's playing The Division 2 on his Xbox One and we're playing on PS4, in order for him hypothetically to play with us, we would either have to buy an Xbox One or he would have to buy a PlayStation. That's not an insignificant investment or cost. When it comes to PC, you don't have to spend more money on another piece of equipment to play with people on a different PC platform.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm still confused why PC players got their panties in a bunch about this. Like, we've already gone over the fact that the Epic Games Store has fewer features. We know that. But they're going to be adding more in the future. But other than that, I don't understand why this is such a big deal.
And that's definitely the horse we've beaten to death, and then we revived it with paddles and then beat it to death again. Because we've brought this up a bunch of different times, and I've done this. I'll do the same thing here. I'm not a PC game player, so I don't know. So it was for a long time like, man, Epic's doing a lot of great things. And then people writing me like, well, they're not because of this. And then people writing in being like, well, no, they are because they have a Trello up that shows where they're going. And it is this discussion, as you say, of, yep, Epic Games Store is far behind Steam in terms of features, but I do believe they're working on it, and I don't believe they're trying to be anti-consumer to all these different things. I know that's not
that's exactly opposite of what Tim Sweeney said last week. Yeah.
Exactly, and I know that the vocal minority, because I'm not in this gamer space, so I don't know. The people who are most vocal about this on the internet completely disagree with me and don't see it that way. They do see it as them being anti-consumer, and that they are trying to take advantage in a bunch of different ways. I don't have a horse in the race. I think Epic is still doing cool stuff. I'm with you, though, that isn't it just another, I mean, what? Why you're just launching? I know how PC people, the reason you go to PCs is because you love simplicity. You love it, just how easy everything is to do over there. So, of course, you just want your one thing, your one driver, your one video card. It's all perfect and simple over there. But, yeah, and that's the thing where, to Nailbotch, I think there is a part of it that I thought was funny. There was that, I sent it around, I think, at the Slack, but not on Twitter. That funny thing that I saw on Reddit, right, where it was, 2008 or whatever, PC players all making fun of console players for their exclusives. 2019, and it was that an image from The Simpsons of two monkeys fighting in a ring of people, and all the ring of people had like PlayStation. It was all console gamers watching Epic and Steam fight each other, and everybody cheering.
It's just I keep expressing my confusion over why people are upset. Like, these kinds of exclusives, paid for exclusives, have been part of the video games business since like the modern console era, like since PlayStation and Xbox and Nintendo all had to fight for it.
Yeah.
And it's been part of the last three generations. And like, yeah, of course Epic is going to pay to get exclusives. Why not? Everybody does it. Like, people just want something to scream about and be mad about, Greg.
One part of it, though, is always change is never met well. Anytime there's a change in what you do and how you do anything, I'm using the general you, not you. I feel like people get upset about it, myself included, when things, I remember, God, when Comixology no longer let me buy books through the app because they didn't want to cut Apple in on the percentage anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I have to go to the Comixology.com to buy the books to use them in the app. And I just do it now and I don't think about it. And it's whatever. And it's how it works, right? I think it's a similar thing here where, to Nanobiology's point, the PC gamer has been used to this landscape for quite some time and has just been happy with it. And so, yeah, the ability to jump in here and do this thing with something that has less features, you don't want to maybe support that. We talk about voting with your wallet. You don't want to support a store that's half-baked or whatever that you feel is forcing it on you and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I get it, but 6 months in a year, I don't think anyone's going to think that way anymore.
Correct. Or another alternative is, if you truly are upset that Epic Game Store is pulling content away from Steam, voice your complaints to Steam, not to Ubisoft, not to Epic, not to Gearbox or any of these other publishers that are doing deals. Go to Valve and say, yo, Valve, look at Epic taking all of these exclusives or these cool opportunities away from us. Maybe you should rethink your finance structure so that it makes it appealing for publishers to stay on Steam and support the infrastructure there. That, to me, is where your anger should be going. Be like, Valve, we're your consumers. We're literally financing your operation. Listen to us and the features that we want. We want more exclusives on Steam. In order to get those, you need to make it financially appealing to the people making the games. So, you know who's really in control here? Valve. That's who you should be mad at.
I just say be mad at everybody. Especially us. You know what I mean? Yeah, fuck everybody. That's right.
I mean, listen, Valve just wants their piece. And so unless they're willing to give up some, we're going to see more and more people partnering with Epic.
You say that, you know, go to Valve and be like, we want more exclusives, right? I don't think that's what people want. They just want all their games in one place, ready to go, blah, 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 day and date. Everything's the same. They basically wanted to. Do you think even if Valve now was to be like, cool, we've heard everything. Is it as simple right now that if they changed, we're only taking 12% too from everybody. There is no more of this math in the background of how many you sell, blah, blah, blah. Would that stop? Has the train already left the station? Can they stop the growth or the at least momentum Epic Games has right now?
Well, they might be able to slow the momentum. There's no doubt that there's a bunch of these deals that have already been done and that they're in the can and what's done is done, right? But I think it would slow momentum for future deals. Because until, you know, Valve has parity with the profit distribution with the Epic Game Store, I think we're going to see more and more of these as time goes on. Now, it's very comparable if you look at like Xbox One and PlayStation 4 and how they approach their third-party partnerships. Because Xbox and PlayStation each have allocated budgets to buy content from third-party publishers to make it exclusive or exclusive first on their platform. And right now, Valve never had to do that in the past because they were the de facto place to publish games on PC. And now they're having some competition. So either Valve needs to lower their profit sharing or they need to start ponying up for
step up partnerships. Yeah, that's a great call. I never even thought about that. You do see every game commercial right end with best place to play, PlayStation.
Exactly.
Logo,
I mean, like Call of Duty is a perfect example of this. It was getting paid by Microsoft for a long time to have exclusives, and then the tide turned, and then PlayStation started paying them. And it's like this happens constantly. So I'm with you that I understand. Steam players saying, I just want all my stuff in one place. I 100% understand that. But I think that the anger is just misplaced.
Sure.
That's all.
I hear you. I think everybody's just going to suck it up in a year. I think it'll just be, this is how gaming is for us now. Because guess what? That's how it was for us. Isn't that right, Boss Baby?
Yeah.
When we all believed in the Vita and we said it'll never die.
Well, I don't know if all of us believe
that. All right. You know what? I'm excited for everybody in the PC gaming universe to get back to being happy and playing games and never yelling at each other and Andrea. But that's still so far away. If I wanted something more immediate, like say what games came to the mom and grab shops today, where would I go?
Greg, you would go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today. Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney Trilogy on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, and Switch. Zanky Zero, Last Beginning on PS4 and PC. Dangerous Driving on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. You gave a great hands-on report about it on the Kinda Funny Gamescast.
Available
now. Podcast service everywhere and youtube.com/kindafunny. Games. Airport Simulator on PlayStation 4. Falcon Age on PlayStation 4. Vapor Room on PlayStation 4. Out There, Omega Symbol, The Alliance on PlayStation 4. No, Switch. Now I got caught up by the fact that there is the Omega symbol. Dissection Simulator, Frog Edition, on Steam VR and Oculus Rift. That sounds gross. Vacation Simulator, Steam VR and Oculus Rift. Over the Cloud, Lost Planet on PC. Then, the Red Dead Online Beta's latest showdown mode, Plunder, is now available. This is actually upcoming dates. I don't know why I put it here. I'm going to go like this and put it on there. Resident Evil DLC is now available for purchase. What I mean there is, you know what? I'll let Matt Perslow from IGN explain it. You can now purchase DLC that unlocks all of Resident Evil 2's in-game rewards, including the fourth survivor mode and infinite ammo for a variety of weapons. The all in-game rewards unlock DLC available now on PlayStation 4, Microsoft Store, and Steam costs $4.99, this is American dollars, and immediately unlocks all the rewards that you usually have to earn through gameplay. This includes the Fourth Survivor, the Tofu Survivor, Unbreakable Combat Knife, Samurai Edge Handgun with Infinite Ammo, LE5 Submachine Gun with Infinite Ammo, ATM-4 Rocket Launcher with Infinite Ammo, Minigun with Infinite Ammo, Bonus Costumes, Models, and Concept Art. EJ writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, Capcom release DLC for Resident Evil 2. It's not Akuma DLC. Oh no, you ass is going to be charged $5 to unlock all the game secrets. Great. The game has been out for months. The hardcore already got everything, so let the casuals get it. Fun. I've platinumed RE 2 months ago. I finished the game about 10 times, but I never beat it on hardcore with an S rank. Why? I don't have the time for trial and error. Maybe I can do it, but the stress I don't need. Oh, $5 for the infinite rocket launcher? Good deal. Now I can have fun in this game destroying stuff. Do you think this is good practice going forward? Let the game sit for months, then release DLC to unlock all the secrets. I thought I would hate it, but I have no time. This is a better option. EJ.
I think this is great.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's kind of going to be controversial, but I mean, it's $5. That's not very much money.
Right.
And he makes a good point that, you know, it came out in January. It's April now, so it's been at least 2 months. And that's just enough time, especially for a short game like Resident Evil 2.
Right.
I mean, $5, unlock all the secrets. Why not?
Yeah, I saw this morning and I was like, oh, okay. It didn't.
It doesn't hurt anybody.
No,
it's a
and that was my thing.
Game.
And then there were questions about it, and I was surprised. There was two of them, EJ, and then another person. I think the other person was a little more negative, but not like super like what the fuck negative. Mm-hmm. No, I think he makes the best point, right? That if you're the hardcore Resident Evil 2 fan, you wanted to go do all this stuff, you probably already did it.
You've done it already.
So why not unlock it for the people like, hey, I'm Greg, and I looked at that shit. And I was like, no chance. I'm doing any of that. Yeah. I enjoyed this game, but I don't want to go do all that stuff.
True.
And kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. I don't think any of this would affect your trophies or achievements. So I don't think this is cheesing it in a way that you would buy them and then be able to unlock. Like, it would either unlock those or, you know, for like the hardcore, there are crazy hard trophies on there. I doubt kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. You can take the infinite ammo in there because that would kind of break it.
I would hope that if there are trophies tied to these, that buying the DLC would not trigger the trophies.
Yeah, exactly. You'd hope it would turn it off, but I don't think that's probably the
but
back
also.
End.
Who cares? It's trophies.
Well, hold on. First off, trophies are a big deal. But secondly, if this does unlock the trophies, I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that would be the only reason why. That could be the hill I could see if you wanted to make a stand and be mad about something. Okay, cool. I have the platinum in Resident Evil. I'd unlock this incredibly difficult trophy. Now you can cheese it this way. That's kind of blah, blah, blah. But again, it's video games and it's an e-penis and who the fuck cares?
Like, you I ain't know, got time to be mad about that, Greg.
I don't. We don't have time.
Bigger things happening
in
the world.
I agree 100%. You're not wrong. You know what I mean? Yeah, okay, yeah, I mean, they're in there. Nobody's arguing. They're saying that it's fine. That was my thing, too. But yeah, it's good. I think it's a good way to do it in terms of it's not at launch. If you've done it and this mattered to you, you've probably done it. Why hold somebody back, right? And it goes back to this conversation that continues to spiral of just like accessibility versus easy versus whatever. Like, how do you gatekeep games and what is your game designed to be? I think it's pretty clear here, that with this releasing that Capcom is like, well, that's not our intention. You know what I mean? Our intention isn't to lock you out of these cool things people made. We probably see it in the back end how many people have done the things to unlock these things. That's not happening. Why not? First off, of course, we're a business. Try to get more money out of you. Like, sure, if you were really excited for that, $5 extra is great. But also, why not give you another reason to turn the game back on? This is the problem with, you know, we talk about used games. We talk about how hard it is to make single player games. We talk about these different things. Making your game and then having it, you know, put on the shelf for 2 months. Eventually somebody's gonna think about trading in, deleting it from their console, doing all these different things. Stop talking about it, which stops selling it. If you couldn't go out there and give people another reason to jump in and play, why not? I'm fine. I'm for it. Barrett, you care?
What?
Good. New dates for you. The one over here that I forgot. Tetris 99 is getting a new tournament this weekend. Let Kevin from GameSpot tell you all about it. Nintendo is holding another tournament in Switch's Battle Royale-inspired Tetris game, Tetris 99. The second Maximus Cup runs this weekend from April 12th through the 14th with another $10 worth of My Nintendo Gold points at stake. And this time around, you don't need to be a Tetris master to have a shot at winning. Unlike the first Maximus Cup, which ranked participants by the number of first place wins they racked up during the tournament, all players will receive a different amount of points depending on what place they finish during this weekend's competition. Every 100 points you'll amass will count towards one Tetris Maximus, equivalent to a first place win. You can see the full point breakdown on GameSpot.com.
Greg?
Yeah.
$10 seems a little ridiculously low for a weekend tournament. Nintendo couldn't pony up at least $100? $100? Nintendo, you got that much money.
Times are tight, man.
No, they're not. They have a giant pile of gold in Japan. It's huge.
Well, hold on. I don't think it's not. I think winner take all. I think multiple people are getting the $10.
Okay, I'm looking at the details. I'm pulling up the fine print.
Pull up the fine print here, because I think it's, yeah, if you get in the whatever bracket, you get multiple.
They just don't have a Zelda or Mario this year. They got to hold back.
They got Animal Crossing coming, brother. And maybe Persona 5. Fuck you, Barrett. Fuck you, Barrett. I don't think I've been on the show since you got fucking proved wrong by rumors, but I'm taking his truth.
All right.
Sucks, doesn't it? Huh?
I already said public, like on
I
the show.
I saw it, I heard it, but I want you to know that I'm here and I don't forget. I'm like an elephant over here with one eye. And
Andrew,
I remember you
was
took
also
out the eye.
A naysayer.
You took out the eye. But that's Andrea's role, all right?
Okay.
It's true.
Andrea needs to, somebody needs to weigh me down. It doesn't need to be you. All right? You're supposed to lift me up. Like
well,
a
now
Josh
I'm on
Groban
your side. Persona 5's coming.
It's too late.
I did. Okay. There will be 999 winners, and they will each receive 999 My Nintendo Gold Points with an approximate retail value of $10. The total prizes will be $9,990.
Okay.
I still think it's too low.
Tight.
Andrea can't be happy about anything. Other new dates for you. Independent developer and publisher Rebellion today announced an official release date for Sniper Elite V2 Remaster on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, and Nintendo Switch. The remaster of the studio's 2012 classic will launch on digital storefronts May 14th. Fans can pre-order Sniper Elite's V2 Remastered from today and take advantage of a special 10% discount on the digital edition ahead of launch. Box editions of Sniper Elite V2 Remastered will also be available May 14th on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and distributed by Sold Out. You added that, Andrea. Thank you for that.
I just want to quickly mention...
Do it.
Big Curves makes a good point. Greg, you frequently buy cheap, easy platinum games, which involve tasks such as rapidly tapping a button. Do you really have a problem with trophies being enabled for RE2 cheating DLC?
100% I do not. That's what I was saying. I was saying if you wanted a hill to die on, I could understand maybe that. That's not Greg Miller. I said if that does unlock the trophies, I'm fucking buying it. You kidding me? I have one coming up that somebody gave a shout out to an easy ass platinum for $15, and you bet your ass I'm buying that. I make terrible financial decisions. I'm 100% in. Don't even get me started. No, I don't care. I'm just saying I can understand people being upset about that.
Okay, touche.
Reader mail time. But first, I'm going to tell you it's brought to you by Hims. You've heard us talking about Hims and how they are helping guys look their best. If you haven't yet, it's time to see what they're all about. 66% of men start to lose their hair by the age 35. And once they start to notice thinning hair, it's too late to do anything about it. That's why you need to be like Nick Scarpino and Andy Cortez in the other room. They noticed their thinning hair. They went to 4hims.com and they talked to a professional about what they could do. Now Andy gets these gummies that first off, I don't know why Andy eats everything in gummy form. Barrett, are you aware of this?
Yeah.
He's the other day, he's like, you want some vitamin C? I'm like, sure. And they were gummies. I was like, what? How old are you?
Anyways, he's a man child.
He gets the gummies because he loves it, and gummies are there if you want it to help
gummies
his thinning
are
delicious. Hair. The best way to prevent more hair loss is to do something about it while you still can. That's why people are turning to 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness, and more for men. Hims is helping guys be the best version of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. These aren't snake oil pins or gas station counter supplements. These are prescription solutions backed by science. No more awkward in-person doctor visits or long pharmacy lines. Hims connects you with real doctors online, which could save you hours. You can get the hair loss treatment everyone is talking about. It's been featured in GQ, Men's Health, Esquire, and Playboy, to name a few, including Kinda Funny. Our listeners get started with Hims for a complete hair kit for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details and safety information. Of course, this is all subject to the doctor's approval. This could cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or pharmacy somewhere else. Go to 4hims.com/gamesdaily. That's forhims.com/gamesdaily. 4hims.com/gamesdaily. We're also brought to you by Harry's. Harry's is all about razors. Harry's founders were tired of paying up front for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. They knew that a great shave doesn't come with gimmicks like vibrating heads, flex balls, or handles that look like spaceships. Tactics that the leading brand has been using to raise prices for decades. They've fixed all that by combining a simple, clean design with a quality, durable blade and a fair price. Harry's bought a world-class blade facility in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Harry's replacement cartridges are just $2 each. That's half the price of the Gillette Fusion Pro Shield. And they all come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you didn't know, this is what Tim uses on that trademark Tim Tam beard. He uses it to get up here and shave this down. He shaves down the neck like that, and then he keeps it all trim and spiffy, and then he puts on sneakers that cost way too much. Get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, including a weighted ergonomic handle, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of my show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/gamesdaily. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/gamesdaily and let them know we sent you to help support the show. Ignacio Rojas writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, what's shaking bacon? I want to talk about people's obsession with endgame content. So the one thing everybody seems to talk about regarding The Division 2 is its endgame. This was true even before the game came out. It's almost as if the only part of the game that really matters is the endgame, but is that a good thing? Is it fair for people to expect to get the true game only after several hours of gameplay? Isn't this kind of like how people talk about the game getting good after 15 hours? I get people wanting to have stuff to do after the game is done, but shouldn't we expect the true game to start well before the end? Anyway, keep being awesome. And Andrea, your hair is looking great today. Greg, you can clearly put in more effort. I am in a t-shirt today, Ignacio, so you nailed it. Andrea?
Yes.
Why do we get so hung up? You play all sorts of these games. These games of service. Obviously, I'm obsessed with The Division. You're obsessed with The Division as well. Why do we put so much focus on endgame, period, in these kind of games?
I think people put focus on endgame because they want a reason to keep playing. But you only want a reason to keep playing if the game is good from the beginning.
Right.
We were talking to Ignacio yesterday because he didn't understand why we liked The Division 2 so much. So Fran and I were trying to explain it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to games of services, at large, whether you're playing Guild Wars or Warframe or Destiny, I think people want more endgame content because once they hit, the narrative campaign end, they want a reason to keep playing. And we know that doing narrative gameplay design is incredibly intense.
Yeah.
And creating short little quests is not nearly as intensive as creating like a 30-hour campaign, for example. And so I think, when people talk about wanting in-game, it's because they really love spending time in that universe, in that world, with their friends, and they want more stuff to play.
Yeah, I think the reason Division 2's endgame was talked about so much is because you've seen games like Destiny 2, like Anthem, drop the ball on that at launch, where that has been the argument, right? That people are playing these games not to get to endgame, but to get to what the next 150, 200, 300 hours of their time with the game's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the reason people drove that home so much in pre-coverage, in promotional materials, now that we're all there in Tier 5, is the fact that, no, holy shit, this game is still fun to play. Like, what, I'm 3 days of play in terms of my hour clock, a little bit more. Like, that's what's impressive about these games. I think for sure The Division 2, from the start, is awesome and fun and totally has a great gameplay loop. And so to get to the end and have them, all right, cool, now here are specializations and you have to level those up. All right, cool, here's World Tier 5, like we just got to before I went to New York and you kept playing this weekend. Mm-hmm. Here's your first gear sets to chase. And here are, like you were telling me about all the exotic stuff you're already on and the real grind of trying to get in there. It's like, well, yeah, like in the same way, other games will turn me off when it's like, oh man, when I hear you and Fran talking about grinding and Destiny for Light or whatever, I'm like, ooh, yeah, I don't know if I want to do that. But I love the Division 2's world so much that, yeah, what you're talking about of trying to grind from 490 to 500 for a gear score, yeah, I'm all in for to do that for a while and run every week, run the, capital building stronghold and do everything else leads up there and get these secret missions. Like, the reason people are talking about the end game and focusing on that isn't because the stuff that comes before sucks. It's because this is so well done. And it is a reason of, like, people jump into these games expecting to hang out a long time. I don't think it's the same thing of, man, Final Fantasy, whatever, one of the Final Fantasies, I forget which one, oh, that sucked for like 30 hours, but then the game opened up. And it's like, yeah. Well, no, that's not the same thing, because you just said it sucked in the beginning, whereas Division 2 never sucked. Destiny 2 never sucked in the beginning. It was very much that you just wanted to have that experience over and over again and not be reminded, oh, I'm just grinding this in a weird, not fun way.
When you want the grinding to feel like it's part of the progression loop, that you're grinding towards something and not just aimlessly. Even though if the gameplay is fun enough, grinding aimlessly can be very fun too.
Yeah.
But I think when it comes specifically to The Division 2, what I love about what Massive has done with the endgame is that they've given me a reason to really explore the depth of the RPG system that they've really built around in that game. So whether it be like me now working on a different specialization skill tree.
Sure.
Or maybe I'm going to try a couple of different sets of
recalibrating
skills.
Weapons, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe I'm going to start looking for specific talents and building my gear sets. And that to me is like where the kind of like really like nerdy science of the RPG really comes in.
Yeah.
And it can be incredibly rewarding to run those missions to get new gear. But what the really cool thing about what they've done with The Division is that I don't feel like I've been doing a lot of repetitive content yet.
Sure.
Because I just finished my last side mission and I'm like easily, you know, like 60, 70 hours plus of playtime into this game. And there's still more stuff on the map that I can go check out.
So like much more, right?
Hidden secrets and things like that. And I just love the world building that they did. And I think that's why people enjoy endgame content, whether it be The Division or whatever your live service game of choice is.
And that's the thing you're talking about. It's like, I feel it does such a great job of being an RPG, but not being the RPG I would traditionally think of, right? Where I'm like, oh man, I love Western RPGs. I love Fallouts. I love making decisions. I love doing this stuff. Whereas for me, my Division character is very much the gun I'm using, the talent I've assigned to it, the outfit I'm wearing, where I unlocked my, you know, backpack bling or whatever, and then running into you or running into people from the Kinda Funny clan and it, then being completely different. I'm like, oh no, I main an SMG. I'm like, really? God, I just break those down right away because I'm locked into what I like, and you actually have these characters that you've built with your own lore for back of a, you know, letter, right. You know, of what made you go that way and the battles you face. Like, what a fucking special game. I'm telling you, it'd be great if we just pause all video games for a while and just play that game.
I mean, yeah, just call up the folks at Bend, tell them to delay Days Gone.
I think they've let that one cook long enough. I'm ready for it. I'm ready. Don't worry about Days Gone. Now. Come on now, Andy. Saucy Biscuit, you almost made it, but I'm skipping you today. Aww. Dapper Steven with a PH writes in thekindoffunny.com/Patreon. See what I did there? No need for the shock collar. Even the shout out to the person that did bring me the shock watch.
Oh.
I have a shock watch now that you can control with Bluetooth, Barrett, if you want.
Okay, I like
my
that
favorite
idea.
Thing at the end of the meet and greet was when I finally got reunited with Nick. I was like, oh, hey, we got a cool new watch. He's like, really? And I put it on him, and then I tapped him and shocked him, and I ran away. And he still gave it back to me later on. Anyways, Dapper Steven with a PH says, I wanted to write in with an easy platinum alert. Boo-wee-wee-wee-wee. That's the new Easy Platinum Alert song.
Oh, okay.
Right? Okay. Super Weekend Mode is supposed to come out today for all the platforms, but the only ones that matter is the PlayStation 4 and the Vita. Vita lives. What makes this little game so special is that it's published by Radalika Games, and they make a whole... Oh, he says here. If you're unfamiliar with Radalika, they are a small publisher with dozens of small Easy Platinum games. Every game is usually less than $5, takes anywhere between 15 minutes and 1 hour, and is cross-buy. Oh, and to top it off, the trophy list always stacks. Radalika's tweets usually always end with hashtag Vita Island, so they know what they are doing with their games, and to be honest, I appreciate it. I know nothing about Super Weekend Mode since the store hasn't updated yet, but the trophies have popped on a few sites, and there are 11 gold and 1 platinum. Get on it, Antri. Are you kidding me? Come on!
Well, I just I gifted my Vita at PAX East, it's got a brand new home. Krista loves it.
Now that
Vita is no longer going to live life in a drawer. It's going to live life being played with Persona 4 Golden. You
know? That's fair. That's good.
Don't you think that Vita's in a better place?
No, I love my Vita. You know what I mean? Sits there. That's like, I open the drawer. It's like, what are we going to do? Oh, just 15 minutes of playing some crap game. Trophy back in the drawer. You know what I'm saying? Come on. I'm all over it, Dapper Steven. Thanks for the heads up. Alex Russ, a.k.a. Zero Syndicate, writes in and says, Kotaku recently put up impressions of Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, the spiritual successor to the classic Castlevania. The author, Ethan, came out underwhelmed by the experience, essentially stating that the experience just didn't feel right. Bloodstained raised $5.5 million on Kickstarter and is looking to be on the path of yet another underperforming Kickstarter game. Do you think that perhaps the hype behind these Kickstarters, Mighty No. 9, Bloodstained, etc., is just too much to meet expectations? Shovel Knight is a phenomenal experience, but didn't come out swinging with a pedigree to that of Koji Igarashi of Castlevania fame, nor that of Keiji Inafune of Mega Man fame. Why don't see too many Kickstarter games make headlines anymore? And perhaps it's time of a bygone era, or the big name creators. What's going on with these Kickstarter games? I feel yes, you don't see Kickstarter making headlines anymore because even when we were at IGN, I remember us being like, we got to stop reporting on Kickstarter games. When Double Fine did it, it was new and novel and crazy. And then, when Inafune did it, when Castlevania, escaped my name right now, when Iga did it, when all these people, it was like, oh my God, they're doing it and their classic thing's coming back. But then it is this thing over and over again of like, I mean, Iga came by kind of funny, the spare bedroom, and did content with us for that game. That game's been cooking forever, and that's just an impossible amount of hype to keep up. When you look at anything, when it's, you look at Duke Nukem, when you look at any game that's been in the hopper forever, by the time you've let it finally get to the point where it's going to get close to coming out and people playing it, can it live up to the hype people have put in their own head?
I mean, generally, no. Yeah. I think very few examples, you know, buck that trend of really wowing audiences. Now, I think most of those games come out to, you know, good or even great reception, but yeah, being excellent and like top of the class, it's tough to say, because sometimes when you have game development that goes on for that long, you've iterated too much. Right. And you've maybe changed your mind one too many times, and the original vision may be lost, and what you promised fans is not necessarily what they're getting.
Right.
I think, you know, you look at an example like Mighty No. 9 and what happened with that Kickstarter, and eventually, you know, the game that came out, and I mean, it came out to incredibly mixed reviews.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they were negative.
Probably mostly negative, right? And so I think it's tough, and game development is long and expensive. So it's like, what's the solution? You know, I know that, you know, Fig is another platform that developers tend to go with and maybe more successful for video game development, because Kickstarter, I feel like, tends to be a better venue for different types of media, like a documentary film or a music album or a piece of art. And it seems to be a easier path to success for those types of art, but I don't know. Game dev is hard, man.
Yeah, and it's long, and it does. You have to share so much stuff so early, and it's just so incredibly difficult to keep on that track, I feel, and have people happy, excited, and then, because inevitably, hype can turn not sour, but hey, I gave you money for this. Where is it? You know what I mean? I need this update. What is taking so long? Why? And you do see people coming out and not aping ideas, but doing same things in the genre that are arguably better than what you thought you were going to get from this other game that you're waiting for. And I think you talk about Inafune with Mighty No. 9, right? That was definitely a weird one of, oh, cool, he's left Capcom, he's doing this on his own, awesome, people supported him, and then he did work on other projects with other people, right? Like, ReCore came out, and all these different things. It was just like, oh, so is this even your main thing anymore? Like, I felt like, I think at the time, people were very much thinking of it in a kind of funny way, right? Of like, oh, you left this big name to do a smaller your thing. We want to support that thing. But then he still kept doing other things.
Well, and I think game development sometimes gets into trouble on Kickstarter because you have too many cooks in the kitchen, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah.
When you're crowdfunding something, you want the crowd to be part of that process and part of that creative insight, and so you offer all these different rewards and the tiers, and a lot of times people who run Kickstarters get so wrapped up in running the Kickstarter and fulfilling rewards that they don't have the time to really dedicate to the original creative vision, the whole reason that they're there to raise funds in the first place. And I think all eyes are really on the next big Kickstarter project that's due to come out, Shenmue 3.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you're right.
Right? I mean, like, that raised a ton of money, right? Obviously supplemented. They had to get additional funds to get that game made, of course. But, I mean, do you think that game's going to live up to the hype?
I don't know. Because that's a sliding scale of, like, what... I don't get me wrong. I know people love Shenmue. Did they... But, I like, if... people love it, but it was a great game. Like,
I
that
mean,
was
it's a cult following.
Exactly. And
sure.
So that's the thing where I feel like that one has a better chance at succeeding because it is a cult following. Whereas when you look into Iga's game, it was very much like, man, Konami hasn't made a Castlevania like Castlevania in a while. We want that kind of game. He's making that kind of game. Awesome. And that was such a long time ago that we got that message to the point that even the Inti Creates put out the 8-bit version or whatever, right, already. That's already come and gone, and which was well-received, which people really, really dug. Jared loved it on Switch. Like, are people still clamoring in the same way for this thing?
Well, the thing is, particularly when we're talking about Castlevania, is that there's so many indie devs doing riffs on the Metroidvania style of game that it's like, do we need another Castlevania? But if we do, if people are so committed to that lore and that narrative specifically in those characters and that world, then you would think Konami would be investing in it, but they're not, for a reason. And maybe that's because the people who are diehard fans aren't big enough to justify the incredible expense to make another game. And you see people who are kind of getting their appetite fulfilled with that style of game or that genre of game with all these really amazing indie darlings that are really doing innovative and unique stuff in that space.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing too, is indies continue to come in, right, with a smaller budget, lower expectations, and have a greater chance for success, right? And that's what you, I think if you could look at it differently and you talk about Mighty No. 9, or you, and I mean, I'm totally putting myself in shoes that I don't have maybe any business doing it, but Iga, Inafune, I think you'd see that done differently. I think you'd see them create a smaller team, get funding privately, and then announce that, hey, we have Bloodstained, it's a spiritual successor to Castlevania, and it's coming out in a year, in a, you know what I mean, an announcement and put it out, rather than do what they have to do here, where we have the idea for the game we want to make, we need you to fund it, which means it's going to be in front of you, warts and all, for a very long time before you ever get to the playing it.
Yeah, it's tough because it reminds me of a conversation I had with a developer recently, who I'll leave unnamed at the moment, but...
Corey Barlow.
Him talking about... It wasn't Corey. Him talking about how they shopped a game to several... publishers and to the platforms, and that nobody would help them, and that they weren't able to get success, and so they finally were like, we're just going to roll with the small team we have. It means that we have to cut a lot of the feature sets that we wanted in the final product, but we're going to do it because we're passionate about this game. We want to make it. But getting other people to believe in your vision and being and to take a financial risk on that vision is one of the most difficult things in video game development.
100%. This is usually where we do squad up, but instead we're going to blow the dust off an old segment called P.S. I Love This Best Friend, where you would write in and talk about somebody you love. Aww. Today, Billy the Door writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, I'm submitting for P.S. I Love This Best Friend, but hope it's okay I take you on a bit of a ride. Feel free to trim if needed. I didn't trim shit, Billy. 1 year ago, I submitted a PS I Love This Best Friend for Kyle and Matt for introducing themselves to me at PAX East and welcoming to the community of NY best friends, including Mike and Kelsey. The past year, I have had the pleasure of attending so many great community events, of course culminating with the NYC meetup and community events this past weekend. None of our community events would be possible without Kyle, Kelsey, and Mike's hard work and dedication to the community. I'm still here on Monday, grinning like an idiot, thinking about all the fun moments and new friends I made. Moments like figuring out how to explain to passerbys why we are overloading this bar, moving from one said overloaded bar to a nearby park, and then watching the Nutter Butter prank from KFAF in said park because, come on! It's a masterpiece. Then running back to the bar so Greg could go to the bathroom, but getting the chance to have a drink with Tim and Gia instead. I had a blast the entire time. Thank you to Kyle, Kelsey, and Mike for their hard work, and thank you to the KF crew for bringing us all together. It's an honor to be part of such a great community. Billy the Door. Well said, Billy. You're an amazing person. Thank you, of course, yes, to everybody who helped out making the meet and greet happen. Everybody from the New York group over there that does such great work in terms of these community meetups. And, of course, everybody who listens and goes to Reddit and goes to Facebook and goes anywhere and just spreads the message of being a kind of funny best friend. You're all awesome. Oh, sorry. P.S. Billy the Door says, also, shout out to the nanobiologist for getting Greg to sign the thank you cards while he had to run to the bathroom. And also for being a total homie and great person to hang with. Agreed. It's time for You're Wrong. This is where people go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Tell us what we screwed up as we screw it up. So we set the record straight for everybody. We did well today, Andrea. We've been cleaning up as we go, by the way. Zaire has the only one it looks like we did. Deal of the day that we missed. Enter the Gungeon is 50% off at $7.50 for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. I know they're wrapping up DLC stuff on that.
Oh, and then Kebabs mentions, in case it isn't mentioned, required reading potential for Kotaku's The Past and Present of Dragon Age 4. Kebabs writes, it's like the Anthem and Andromeda investigations about how BioWare had to reboot development after Anthem and EA's push for live service games in their dev teams. Interesting. I did not see that.
Yeah, that one.
Thank
I
you for the call.
12:30
p.m. Whoever is in there right now, just stop wasting your time. We're not going to read all your mumbo jumbo. Seriously, like, what are you doing?
If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show at patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. If you like that, great. You've already gone there and done that, so that's fantastic. Watch us recorded live, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Watch it later, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com. Listen on podcast services around the globe. Tomorrow, it's me and Gary Witta for the first Witta Wednesday I've done in a long, long, long time. Thursday, Andrea's back with me. And then Friday, Tim and I close out the week.
All right.
All right, Barrett. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, it's been our pleasure to serve you.